bringing you fresh thinking about people, culture, well-being and leadership inspired by real stories. With your hosts, Natasha Wallace and Blair Palmer. It's the Human Revolutionary Show.
Hello and welcome to the Human Revolutionary Show. I'm Blair Palmer.
And I'm Natasha Wallace.
And now I do have to apologise before we get into the show today, because I've got the builders in. And it's been, you know, a long time coming this. But of course, they start drilling the second that we hit record. So there you might hear a bit of that as we go. So yeah, a bit of extra excitement and stress in my life is just what I need.
We're doing our Deepak Chopra 21 day abundance challenge at the moment,
which
we mentioned last week. So in an abundance generating way, what is the drilling going to lead to?
Oh, it's irritating, isn't it, when people do that? well, actually, of course, you know, I'm moaning about it, but I have wanted this to be done for a very long time, and it's going to be amazing just from a sort of lifestyle perspective. The conservatory that we did have was falling to pieces. The new one is an absolute beauty that's been designed specifically for what we want and need, and it's being accompanied with a brand new deck and a brand new hot tub. And the good thing about starting the work now is that hopefully we'll be able to enjoy some of that later on in the summer. So a little bit of discomfort, a bit of drilling today, and a bit of hot tubbing in a few weeks.
So, amazing. Yeah. I'm sure one of the Deepak learnings in the last, I'm on day 19, a little bit worried, actually. I've only got these 3 days left and then I'm done. Yeah. And I don't want it to end. No. But one of the things that Deepak said, I'm sure, was about growth can only come from suffering.
Oh, really? Well, I haven't got to that module yet. Yeah.
If you just believe that, like, you're only ever going to grow if you're in pain.
Well, it is true, of course. I mean, you must. There is only learning. The learning exists just outside that comfort zone. Yeah. There really isn't any learning to do. You can do recovery and all of that from within the comfort zone, but you really can't do any learning. And I mean, I've renovated a lot of homes in my time. I always buy a do-or-upper. You know, I at least feel like I understand this process and I know the questions to ask and I kind of anticipate what's coming. But still, this is probably the biggest so far, just in terms of scale and finances. But, you know, it's one of those things. And it's great as we spend more and more time in our homes. And I know that this has been a massive trend over the last 16, 17 months. As we spend more and more time in our homes, we value them more and more, and we want them to work for us in very specific ways. It's not just a place where we go at, you know, 8 o'clock in the evening to crash. We're there all day. I mean, I was working from home anyway, but for by and large, people are at home a lot more, and their space really, really matters.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I've got to admit, I've had a little bit too much of my space now. Yeah. Which is why I broke out into a co-working space last week, which has been amazing. And I was looking forward to now spending 2 days a week in a co-working space. And then me and my daughter came down with the stinkiest cold at the weekend. It totally wiped us out. And we're now ill. So, well, you know, cold ill. So, yeah. You know, cold is one of those things. It shouldn't be called a cold.
No.
It should be called something so much worse than because it makes you feel so, or can make you feel so awful. Yeah. And it's just a cold. But anyway, we've been doing lateral flow tests. We've had 2 negative lateral flow tests. Because we've both had a cough, we're having to shield. And now we've done the proper COVID tests, which I just am amazed. For all of the criticism that's been levied at, you know, anybody involved in the response to the pandemic, my moment of total magic and gratitude today came when my tests came through the post. I only ordered them last it can't have been last night. It was probably yesterday afternoon. They arrived first thing this morning. We did our tests, and literally all we have to do is pop them back into the post box down at the bottom of our road. And I was thinking that we'd have to go to a, you know, proper post office, but of course that would be ridiculous because we're shielding. So literally, I've just got to get them back in the post box, and I'm sure we'll have the results in no time at all. I think that is a tremendous achievement.
Yeah, I agree. Well, look, slightly sticking on the subject, there's always a link, isn't there? Slightly sticking on the subject of not feeling very well. Shall we go into our work in the news?
Yes, let's do it.
Work in the news.
So this is a story that you found about Bumble, the dating app company. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what they're planning to do?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think anything that's got dating app in the headline's interesting anyway, isn't it? I mean, dating apps are just interesting, terrifying things.
Yeah, that's a whole other show.
Well, I mean,
our experiences of that.
When I was prepping for the podcast, I did actually think, oh, are we going to go into our personal experiences of dating apps? And I thought, no, that's a mental ill health situation right there in the making. So we'll avoid that. But anyway, suffice to say, they are fraught with danger. But for anybody who has met the love of their life on a dating app, fabulous. And please, you know, let us know. Get it in the comments when we post the podcast. But yeah, so anyway, Bumble. They're a 700-strong company now, headed up by Whitney Wolf Heard, which is the youngest self-made billionaire. She actually came out of another dating app, which I won't mention the name of. I think they went through a bit of a legal battle because she accused them of sexual discrimination, sexual harassment. I think she won quite a lot in that case and came out and set up this Bumble app, which is quite interesting because it's a female-led app. So the woman has to make the first move, basically. It's quite an interesting concept. And she's made a huge success of it. It's an incredibly successful company. However, they've just declared the fact that they have given everybody a week off of extra paid holiday this year to focus on themselves and to help with burnout. And their head of editorial actually tweeted a tweet that's now been removed, where she said that this Whitney Wolf Heard had correctly intuited our collective burnout. So, you know, they're not feeling great at the moment. And it was said that the global team have had a very challenging time during the pandemic. So I can imagine there's been lots of activity on Bumble over the last year. You know, hopefully it hasn't led to lots of face-to-face dates, but I'm sure it's probably kept a lot of people sane. And they listed actually on the New York Stock Exchange in February, and they raised $2.2 billion. So they are a real success, but also, you know, we're finding more and more with these huge success stories. And we talked about BrewDog recently, where there is huge financial success, there is often a trade-off, and the trade-off is often in people's mental health and stress levels. So in this article, it quoted an Indeed survey said that 67% of workers are feeling burnt out. That's a 9% increase from pre-COVID. And obviously the pandemic has exacerbated things. And if you look at the data that Glint have been tracking over the last year, you can see this gradual increase in burnout signals over the past year, meaning that the things that they would associate with burnout, that they're going up. So, you know, this isn't the first time anybody's talked about burnout in the last year. I mean, there's lots of noise about burnout. I think it's interesting to give your employees a week off to deal with it. I would argue that, you know, that will scratch the surface. It's not going to fix the burnout. I'm sure people will be very, very pleased with a week off. LinkedIn did the same thing back in April. They gave about 16,000 of their full-time staff a week off, and other companies have done something similar. But what's your thoughts on it, Blair?
Well, I mean, I think I don't know why they took the tweet down about correctly intuiting. Maybe it's just the word intuiting that they didn't like. But anyway, I think that trusting that intuition, probably backed up by quite a lot of data as well, is to be commended. And I think many of us look around organizations at the moment. I was working with a team last week, and they were saying, you know, there isn't any particular reason why I should be feeling, you know, like this. No particular reason. I you know, I have nothing special has happened. Yes, exact for, you know, global pandemic, big restructure in your organization, you know, blah, 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 whole new technology transformation, you know, apart from that. I think everyone is feeling, or a lot of people are feeling this way. I think it's great when organizations say, you know what, we're not going to deal with this on a one-to-one basis only. We're going to say, just shut down for a week. Just shut down for a couple of weeks. That way, you're not getting any emails from the people that are left back in the office. Nothing's happening without you. You really can say, I'm just going to sleep and be with my family and read a book or go for a walk or whatever it is that feels good to you. And also a bit of reflection probably goes on in that time. So I think that that's fantastic. As you say, a week is no time at all. And I know that when I go on holiday, which I rarely go for longer than a week, but when I have been for longer than a week, I notice that I really don't get into the holiday way of doing things until the first week is over. And the best is a 3-week holiday, because you have your week to kind of be finding it all very odd that you're not and not really enjoying it. And then 2 more weeks, apart from the last few days when thinking about coming home, really 2 more weeks where you can just really be in the holiday spirit. But of course, it's hard to shut down a business, even for a week, I would imagine, let alone for longer than that. So that's very commendable. The bigger question, of course, is, and what else? You know, what is the longer term solution, or what is a more sustainable way for an organization to ensure that they don't burn their people out to such an extent that they have to shut the business for a week to let everyone, you know, get their heads together? I think that's, and you mentioned something about how fast they've been growing, and I wonder if the clue is in there somewhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was reflecting on what leads to burnout, and of course, you know, I think burnout is different according to different people. So when I burnt out, you know, I was pretty destroyed, that it took me a long time to recover. I think that burnout is being used more in sort of common parlance to describe being absolutely exhausted and wiped out and potentially stressed. And interestingly, LinkedIn track this data. And so, you know, they gave everybody a week off. They had the data to show what was leading to the burnout in their organization. And they identified these 3 things. So one was a lack of self-care. One was social isolation, and one was family struggles. And actually, just in The Guardian today, there was something in there about isolation is changing the way that our brain looks on a scan. It actually affects us. It has a sort of quite debilitating effect on us, which is interesting. The good news is we can recover from it, and our brain can recover and we can feel better again. But, you know, being socially isolated is affecting people. And I think that, you know, the family struggles, that's one thing in terms of, you know, there's going to be all sorts of different things that are impacting there. But 2 things that we potentially have slightly more influence over, both personally and also from an employer perspective, are this self-care and this isolation thing. And they're both incredibly important. I think they are going to be central to us helping to support well-being in the future of work. And I think that unless we really consider both of those things, both for employers who are embracing the hybrid approach, where there's going to be lots of people who are going to be dispersed, I guess, and for those who aren't, self-care and isolation are incredibly important factors to really, really understand. And I mean, a study that I talk about an awful lot, and actually it made a massive difference to me in terms of how I operated socially, I guess. Operated, that sounds quite contrived, but the priority that I gave to friendship, I guess, and relationships outside of work, was a study that was done by, or still going on, by Harvard Medical School. It's a longitudinal study, and it's been going on for over 80 years. And it's the Grant Study of Adult Development. And basically what they have been tracking for all this time is what really leads people to long, healthy, happy lives. And they anticipated that it would be things like status and money, and what you had in your life. But actually they found that the single most important thing that kept you well was the quality of our relationships. And I think that probably was a surprise to them in the study. And when I read it, it was a surprise to me, actually, as somebody who's always prioritized work and keeping my children alive. Like, they're the two most important things, or have certainly been historically the two most important things in my life. When I realized that actually the quality of our relationships was central to our long-term health and happiness, it really made me consider how much time I allow for spending time with the people that I love, the people that I care for, and actually building new relationships. And of course, you know, if you think about the lives we've led over, you know, for over a year now, we have been cut off from our main source of well-being. Really, ultimately, you could be that stark, couldn't you? No wonder people are feeling the way that they are.
Well, I think there is a different mentality. So you mentioned about, you know, the focus on the work and all of that. There is a different mentality amongst some people, and I might be one of them, who they love their work. That, you know, Bumble is her baby, right? And there are a lot of people like that. When you think about the BrewDog guys, you know, it's quite a few people that we've talked about who their life, their legacy is going to be this business that they created at some point in their career. And they're happy to make huge sacrifices. It's not even a sacrifice for them. That's just how they, well, it's what they think about when they wake up in the morning. It's the last thing they think about before they go to bed. It's they're living their dream. That isn't always the case for everyone in their organization. And it doesn't mean those people don't care about it, or you know, they don't find meaning in the work or anything. They might be passionate about it too, but it's a different type of person. And so we have to also think about, you know, what are the needs of the people who are coming to do a job of work that is a job for them, and now they work at Bumble, and then in a couple of years time they want to progress in their career, maybe they'll go and work at Match, or then maybe leave tech altogether or leave dating apps altogether and go and work somewhere else entirely. You know, that's their career, and that's different. And so a lot of organizations seem to want everybody to be very, very loyal and very, very committed, and to live and breathe the business as if it were their own. I think that can lead to burnout, and it can lead to someone sacrificing their relationships, the quality of their relationships, who can't really afford to sacrifice the quality of their relationships. You know, she might be able to make those sacrifices, because it doesn't matter, because her needs are met by the business. But if you're a normal person for whom working in a particular company for a few years is part of a longer term career, making those sacrifices maybe doesn't work for you. Can't work.
You know, I think it's interesting. There's two things that come to mind. One is, I've spent the last 3 years working in a scaling tech company, where my job was to take care of well-being and performance. And really, they're almost at two opposite ends of the scale sometimes. I mean, that's not fair. I don't think it's as binary as that, because often when we excel and when we perform really well and when we're really successful, it makes us feel well. So actually, that, you know, that's not quite true. But of course, we do know when we push ourselves too hard for too long, it's not sustainable, and therefore it can impact our health. And, you know, in that very exciting scaling tech environment, it can be really, really difficult to take your foot off the pedal. I mean, I would often in coaching sessions say you need some time off. And there'd be 117 reasons why people would say they couldn't take that time off. And then they'd get sick and then they'd come in. I mean, obviously, I've come in today with a cold, but I feel well enough to be here with you doing this podcast. I'll take some time off later. But, you know, these are people that are really pushing through, feeling quite unwell. And it can be hard. It's very exciting. It's very exciting and energizing working in a scaling tech environment. I mean, I absolutely loved it. And it's why I'm now starting up my own tech company. And I'm super excited about it again. But of course, you do need to understand when to take your foot off the pedal. But, you know, even in a normal everyday working environment, if I reflect on my own team, so when I was a people director, I had a team of, you know, between 15 and 20. And I burnt out. I mean, I've told my story many times about burning out, but actually the wheels were coming off the bus of my own team. And it's because I think very often as leaders, we have to be passionate and excited and motivated or dedicated to or committed to the thing that we're all trying to achieve. Like, that's our job as a leader. Your job as a leader is to get very, very focused on the thing that you need to achieve and then align a group of people or maybe a massive number of people alongside you, in front of you, behind you, wherever you want to put them. To be very, very, very focused on that thing too. And I think it can give you tunnel vision. So I certainly had tunnel vision. You know, the most important thing for me was the vision. And so we had to achieve the vision. And actually, I think on the journey, I lost sight of the people. Mm. And I think when you lose sight of the people and you make assumptions that everybody is as focused on the vision as you are, right, that's when things start to go wrong.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at. You've expressed it so well. Do you think we really understand performance? Do you think we really understand either what great performance looks like or how to tell whether someone is performing, how to tell whether we're performing? Because I think that we've got some pretty crude measures of what performance looks like. And so that is one of the things that leads us down this route of almost inevitable burnout. Because it's a cliche to say, but if you measure performance by presence, you know, being in every meeting, taking on a lot of stuff, saying yes to all sorts of things, being that kind of employee that, you know, we're all encouraged to be in a way, enthusiastic and positive and a yes attitude and a can do and all of that sort of thing. If that's how we measure performance, we might be actually creating the very thing that we want to prevent. Whereas if we could change the way that we understand, if we could actually understand performance better, what performance looks like and how you can tell if someone's performing, to me, we would radically change the way that we work, the pressure we put ourselves under, the amount that we say yes to, where we place our focus. It would be a massive, I imagine it would be a massive difference. Do you know of any research like that?
I mean, I guess if you look at, we've talked about OKRs before, and how useful OKRs can be in driving performance. I'm sure there must be some research that shows that a radical focus on what matters most cuts away the noise and therefore allows performance to flow. But I wrote that down actually in my notes when I was writing down I talk about a conscious culture. So how do you create high performance in a sustainable way? I mean, I use the word conscious because that's my bag. How do you create a conscious culture? And one of the four aspects that I think are central to a conscious culture are a team alignment, and also with this absolute total focus on what matters most. And I think when you're a leader, not that this necessarily happens, but I think when you're a leader, or certainly people like us, entrepreneurs who run our own thing, we're the masters and mistresses of our own destiny. We can decide on any one day, week, month, what does matter the most, and we can pivot. We can move quite quickly. We're agile in that way, aren't we? But I think, you know, when you've got a whole team of people, it requires quite a lot of communication and structure and focus to keep people focused on what matters most so that things don't get flabby. And so I think that that's probably the first cornerstone in enabling this, in enabling people to do their best work, to perform and actually to manage their energy and become more efficient. So I think that there needs to be absolute clear direction from the leadership. And that I don't necessarily mean some sort of, you know, beautifully sculpted strap line about what the organisation is there to do. I mean, that can be helpful. But I mean, absolutely clear direction given from the leaders, or, you know, co-created between the leaders and the teams, so that they are so, so clear about what matters most right now. And that's where OKRs are useful, because it's a quarterly thing. Things are very dynamic. They move fast. You know, you can't do that on an annual basis anymore. It just doesn't work. You've got to keep on top of what's going on. So, you know, very, very clear direction, establishing clear priorities so that people can focus. And I think that that requires a bit of a re-education and an unlearning in some people's minds. I'm doing it to myself constantly, where I'm saying, I don't have to work a 10-hour day, but I do have to get these two things done. And if I get them done in 2 hours, I will have performed today. I will have really performed. And if I don't get them done, then I maybe haven't performed so well. And it's different, isn't it? When you focus on what has to be done, the most critical aspect of a job, of team deliverables, rather than how long somebody is working, it changes things. But I think for a lot of teams, that would require a shift in thinking.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think there's often resistance to it, because it can feel like you're making it less fun, you know, because you're making it about essentials, and you're saying there are these three deliverables and this is your job, and anything that gets in the way of these three deliverables is a distraction, or we need to know what it is, because maybe there's something more important, you know, that needs to be done. But it's got to be built into the system. It can't just happen because you've seen something over there that you're interested in or seems important, and so you go over there and do it. Well, that has to be part of the system, is how we recalibrate as we notice new tensions or new needs. So that can feel very mechanical. It can feel very robotic, and that you're just a sort of cog in a wheel. However, I think that it comes down to meaning. I think that when people know what they are, what part they play in a bigger picture, and they can see that when they work really hard one week, or where they solve a problem that has been really difficult to solve, they can see, I did that, and that made this difference here. And ultimately, it was all about this. And I can see how I played my part in that. I didn't spend my days working incredibly hard, racing around after people, far too many priorities, at the end of the week or the end of the year, absolutely exhausted. But I can't really tell you what difference any of it made. It was just cleaning up other people's messes, probably. And that's very unrewarding. So whilst it can feel like, oh, you're trying to put me in a box and it's all become about a tick box exercise, if it's done right, it's the reverse of that. It's about meaning and purpose and a deep sense of fulfillment, knowing that you made a difference.
And I mean, that might mean that there's other aspects that you sort of overlay into the team's work in order to enable that. I mean, for instance, we've decided that as a business, we want to give back. So last week, we were considering how we could provide, so this tech platform that we're sort of building, that we will launch early next year. So watch this space, guys. I'll talk about it at some point soon. But how we can basically give that away for free to people who otherwise wouldn't have had access to it. The amount of energy that's created amongst the team is amazing, because it makes the work that we're doing more important. If it wasn't already important, it's made it more important. So sometimes you have to think about how what you are doing and what you are delivering, how could it be even more useful or even more meaningful? Because you cannot generate that sort of energy in a team by asking people to perform harder, by asking people to work harder, by expecting them to do more. That's not where it comes from. You know, more energy comes from the heart. It comes from knowing that what you're doing is really important and meaningful and it's going to make a difference. So I totally agree. I totally agree on the meaning point. So help the team find meaning. Get them to generate ideas around how it could be more meaningful. And I know it's probably not always possible, but I bet it's possible a lot. And I wonder if people are having those conversations. Yeah. But I also think that, you know, leaders need to recognize that it isn't okay to be operating at a 4 or 5 out of 10 on an ongoing basis, not for them and not for their teams. I mean, I was with a team of leaders last week, and as I often do, I got them to score themselves from 1 to 10 on how well they felt. And 1 being pretty awful and 10 being absolutely fantastic. And they were giving me 4s and 5s. Now, these are CEOs of relatively, you know, SMEs, with reasonable sized workforces. Now, the leaders of those businesses are feeling 4 or 5 out of 10. And it starts from there, doesn't it? Mm. So if I, as a leader, am feeling 4 or 5 out of 10, we can bet your bottom dollar that probably there's quite a lot of people in my team that are feeling that too. So you have to do something about it if you want to achieve sustainable performance. Mm. And I think that often as leaders, we're giving lots of double signals out. So we're saying, we want to take care of you. We want you to take care of yourself. We want to be flexible. Please look after yourself. Don't push yourself too hard. And then we're 4 or 5 out of 10 leaders. I mean, you know, it doesn't stack up, does it? Because when you are operating as a 4 out of 10 as a leader, what are the sorts of behaviors that your people are seeing? Well, they're probably going to see a short fuse. They're probably going to see you in tell mode rather than in ask mode. They're probably going to see a lack of direction. You know, there's all sorts of, and I've been there. I absolutely have been there as that leader, where you're fraught, you're tense, you're overworked, you're overwhelmed. And therefore, all of the things that you need to do as a good leader, which is to set very clear direction, to help people achieve meaning in their work, to create psychologically safe working environments where people can be honest and tell the truth and raise issues, et cetera, you know, when you're at a low ebb or low energy, it's very, very hard for you to create those conditions.
Yeah. And I think what we don't understand, there was some really great research. I quote this particular bell curve quite a lot. It's the Yerkes-Dodson curve. And the Yerkes-Dodson curve, typical bell curve, upward bell curve, the idea being that over time, quality of performance increases until it meets, it reaches its peak of time and performance, those two axes, and then it drops away. And what these Yerkes and Dodson guys discovered was that, firstly, when people kept diaries about their performance, they thought the peak was way after when it actually was. In reality, they were already on the downward slope of their performance. They thought they were really, really killing it, right? And that happened hours or weeks before, in fact. So firstly, we're not great at judging when our peak performance is, so we keep going. And actually, one of the things I think, if I recall rightly, about that research was some of the things that made people think they were really performing high was, you know, the adrenaline and all of that. Actually, that was not helping their performance. They weren't able to think clearly. They weren't sleeping, etc. So firstly, the peak is earlier than we think. And secondly, if
at the moment of peak performance, you take a break. When you return, so two things happen. Firstly, during the break, you often have an aha moment. So something that was not clear to you while you were working in the problem suddenly becomes clear. As we know, you're in the shower, you're taking the dog for a walk, whatever, that's when you realize. These guys, when they took a break, they got their subjects who were doing the experiment, a bunch of men, because that's when this research was done, it was all men, to do crochet. They taught them the crochet. So they'd be doing their work type activity, then they take a break and do crochet. And they would have these breakthrough moments. But then when they would return to the activity, they would meet the activity nearly at the point of peak performance and be able to sustain that performance for longer than if they just pushed through. So the idea here is, yes, you intuit that people are at the point of burnout and you give them a week off. But actually what we need to be much better of at as leaders, and maybe critical role for HR here, who are the sort of intuits in the organization very often, getting a temperature check of what's going on, is to notice that peak performance and say, we break now, not in 3 weeks or 6 months or 16 months down the line when everyone's broken.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, this isn't about making it easier for everybody. It's not about the tea and tissues sort of old school personnel type approach to people management. It's a lot about education. So it's about educating the workforce to understand what actually leads to resilience. So people understanding what enables them to feel mentally and physically well. So I think that's really important. It's about making sure that time for social connection, unencumbered time for social connection, is just embedded into the way that you work. It is about that psychological safety of saying, actually, no, I don't feel great, or this isn't really working for me, or I don't really know what the priorities are, or are we really focused on the right things? And that sort of leadership can come from anywhere in the team. It doesn't have to come from the leader. So, you know, it's so, so helpful when your team is leading as well as you as the leader, you know, because you want people to be picking up on that stuff. As the leader, you don't get it right all the time. I mean, absolutely not. So having other people around you who can say, no, this isn't really working, we're not doing it in the right way, where are the efficiencies, how can we make it better, I've done this piece of research, look what it says, you know, and then shares it with the team. You want all of that to be going on. And I think that, you know, what this group of leaders I was talking to last week, they asked me what they should do. So we don't feel great, what should we do? And I said, well, you need to sit down as a group of leaders. They were all from different organizations. So, you know, each leader with their respective leaders should sit down as a group and decide what they want the environment to actually look like. You know, are we okay with people burning out? I mean, you know, you might find that a lot of the leaders around the table are like, yeah, it was inevitable, isn't it? So, yeah, I'm fine with it. In which case, well, you've set the tone. But if you're not okay with people burning out, and ideally you wouldn't be, they'd be sitting around saying, no, okay, well, we don't want people to burn out. What are the risks of people being affected negatively in terms of what we've got ahead of us for the next year? How do we do this in a sustainable way? And what do we need to be saying and doing as leaders to enable people to work in the most effective way? And I think one of the most important things for these leaders is for them to actually believe that more work does not lead to better performance. The more they get their head around that, the more they get their head around the fact that meaningful work, prioritizing, giving people the opportunity to grow and stretching them, creating psychologically safe environments, capturing people's hearts, you know, with the work that you're doing, with the reason you're doing it, all those sorts of, that's what leads to energized, motivated, engaged, high performing teams. It isn't the amount of time people spend working. It's just not. Yeah. I mean, and I'd love to have the time to sit down and pull together all of the research that proves that, but there is plenty. Yeah. So, you know, I guess the starting point for leaders is to recognize that throwing time at something will not drive sustainable performance. And there's a practical reality, which is there's loads and loads of work to do. So how are we going to get it done in a sustainable way? If you need to talk to your workforce to enable you to solve that problem, then do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, I think there's lots in there. I'd be, as ever, really interested to hear from leaders who are finding ways to continue to do amazing things, you know, with their people without breaking them. You know, I'd love to hear examples of that, because very often when I'm brought in, it's they've tried, but they haven't found a way yet. So then they need my help. So yeah, I'd love to hear those examples. And we're really happy to get people on the show. And if you've got a great story of how you're doing that in your organization, we'll get you on. You can share your top tips. So please do subscribe. We're on everything now. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple, we're on Player FM, we're on some other stuff that I don't even know what it's called. I just clicked all the buttons. So you can find us everywhere. Please do subscribe, leave us a review and a star rating. And please, very importantly, please do share that you're listening to this podcast, because it's really the only way that anyone is going to know that it exists if you tell them that you're enjoying it and ask them to give it a try for themselves. So we will see you again next time.
Bye.